Hi, I'm Carmen LaBerge. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Oh, I got to tell you, I got a lot to cover today. We are going to try to reconnect the eternal with the everyday in ways that honor Jesus. And we are going to talk about the headline news and see if we can find ways to get God back into the conversation as we, the ambassadors of Jesus Christ, you know, set loose here in the world that he so loves to really bear authentic witness to who he is. That's, if you've been wondering, like, what am I here in the world to do? Why am I alive? What's my purpose? There you go. I'm just going to lay it out for you. You are here to not only know God through the saving grace of Jesus Christ, his son, but to make him known to others. I mean, that's it. That's pretty much the deal. And so welcome to Connecting Faith, where we seek to do that in ways that are relevant to the culture in which we live, where we take seriously the headline news of the day, and we seek to bring the mind of Christ to bear on that news in order that we can engage our neighbors and our friends in substantive conversations. You know, every conversation isn't, you know, me whipping out the Bible and like pointing to a particular verse of scripture and trying to slay somebody with it. That's actually not what I would recommend in terms of a conversational apologetics approach in the world today. Like, most people out there are thinking about something. So the trick is to get them thinking about what they're thinking about and then see where you can enter in, as Jesus would, into the conversation that person is already having, even if it's the self-talk that they're doing in their own head. And so let me just encourage you to consider that today. So I got a bunch of stuff that I would like to cover. I think I'm going to lead off today with a conversation about what's going on in Haiti. And the reason I'm going to do that is, first of all, we have been specifically asked by mission partners there to pray for the situation on the ground in Haiti and for congregations here in the United States who sent young people to Haiti on mission trips this summer, those short-term mission trips. We now have church groups and mission volunteers from South Carolina, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and I just recently saw one from somewhere up in the Midwest, might have been Michigan, who have groups who are... Now, here's the language of the secular press. So I don't know if you think of yourself as a missionary and you think of yourself, you know, as one whom God has sent to a particular place on a particular assignment on his behalf, then is the word stranded a legitimate word? I mean, you know, if God really has you there, then you're not stranded. And if God intends to use you there, you're not trapped. And if you feel stranded or trapped, then maybe you weren't called in the first place, which is also really, really important conversation for us to have about where we send people on, particularly on short-term missions, and the resources that we send them with in terms of their own personal equipping for the kinds of circumstances they are going to experience. So we're talking about children as young as junior high on these mission trips in Haiti. And Haiti is, a pretty volatile place. A lot of people living on a very small island with very few resources. And so... So let me just lift this story up to you in case you don't know what's going on. You could Google Haiti, and this is what is going to top your news feed. Looters have pillaged, burned, and vandalized shops in Haiti's capital city following 2 days of violent protests over the government's attempt to raise fuel prices. Now, at this point in the story, the government has suspended its plan to raise those fuel prices, but the situation is still extremely volatile. And I would say that the looting is actually now probably of greater concern to the Haitian government than the protests which were taking place in the streets, which have largely been dispersed. But there's no reason to think that those will not start again. The airport, at least as far as I know, remains pretty much closed, and outbound flights to the United States of America, which were suspended on Saturday, to my knowledge, have not yet resumed. Telecommunication services, according to the Haitian government, are considered limited, affecting all of Haiti. The U.S. Embassy in Port-au-Prince warned U.S. citizens yesterday to shelter in place, noting that many airlines had canceled their flights and, quote, the airport has limited food and water available. Please do not attempt to drive. So the real concern is people trying to actually get to the airport, not, you know, and then because once you get there, they don't have supplies to take care of you anyway. And so let me read the end of the CNN article covering this, because I'm doing this. My motivation for lifting up this story is not just to, you know, get us on our knees praying for those who are in Haiti, but to get us thinking about why we do short-term missions, where we go, and how prepared our mission teams are to stay long-term under incredibly poor circumstances if things should deteriorate while they're in country. Because if God has called you to be there short-term, it's quite possible God has called you to be there. And if God didn't call you to be there, maybe God didn't call you to be there short-term. Maybe you were just really going to on more of a tourist trip than you were on a genuine mission of Christ to the world. Please do not hear this as a criticism of those who are currently there. I don't have any idea what's in their hearts or their motivation. What I'm trying to lift up are points of conversation for us who are here in the United States, who are reading the headline news, and who are recognizing people absolutely have the right to protest when their government does something that they view as detrimental to their common life. We just celebrated the 4th of July. If you are not supportive of people's right to protest their own government, then I'd want you to think back about what you did less than a week ago, celebrating, you know, a frankly violent revolt and uprising against the dominant power of the day. And so you and I tend to like to think that the whole world is safe and we can go wherever we want and do whatever we want, and certainly, you know, do so in the name of Jesus, all of which is wonderful. But the world is not a safe place in terms of the way we think about safe. And so if you were to read the CNN coverage of what's going on in Haiti, you will see missionary organizations named in this article who are asking for things like, please join our entire name of ministry family, both North American and Haitian, as we pray for a quick conclusion to these demonstrations. I'd like to see an alleviation of the reasons for the demonstration, not necessarily just a quick end to the demonstration. Like, I'm a let God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And if these people are being forced to live on $5 a week and the government wants to increase the price of their gasoline by 38%, then, you know, I'm kind of with the people on this. And so, our hearts are broken, but are solutions also offered? And so this would be some of the conversation that I guess I would hope to stimulate when we talk about helping. How are we really helping in terms of our short-term missions? That's a challenging question. There's actually lots of books on this subject. The best one that I'm aware of out there is When Helping Hurts. So, you know, if you're a short-term missionary person, you're a global missions person in your church, you're probably right now nodding your head up and down, recognizing that there are a lot of folks who like to engage in what we think of as short-term missions, who don't really recognize that Jesus may send us to very difficult, complicated environments there's places in America where God could send you that would be equally as violent, and frankly, you probably wouldn't go. So at this point, the U.S. Embassy continues to warn American citizens to stay inside in the nation of Haiti as the demonstrations in Port-au-Prince continue. So just lifting up the Glade Church in Mount Juliet, Tennessee, the Chapin United Methodist Church in South Carolina. There's a church in Bradenton, Florida that has a mission team there, and several others. So there's one called a Woodland. Maybe that's that one. So let's just be praying for those folks. Obviously, those parents are in a lot of distress. Let's be praying that, you know, God's will be done, whatever that is, in this particular circumstance. I know you are wondering if I'm going to talk about what's going on in Thailand. Yes, I am. I think I might have to do that in the last segment of the program today, but we will certainly get to it. I'm going to have an opportunity here in just a moment to have a conversation with Aaron Chambers. Now, Aaron is a pastor, and he's also an inspirational speaker. He wrote a book called Eats with Sinners, Loving Like Jesus. And I got to tell you, you know, I read a lot of books, not just because I do this show with you and we have authors on, and so I read their books, but I read a lot of books anyway. And Aaron's book is actually a book that I read when it came out last year. And so I wanted to share it with you. I wanted to invite him on here to Connecting Faith to talk with us, because the subject matter is so provocative. And I'll just give you this little taste, this little tidbit. Every meal Jesus ever ate, he ate with a sinner. All right, there you go. When we come back, my conversation with Aaron Chambers. I'm Carmen LaBurge. You're listening to Connecting Faith. Hey friends, you're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. I am joined in conversation today by Aaron Chambers. Aaron is the lead minister of Journey Christian Church in Greeley, Colorado. He's a husband, a father, he's a track coach, he's an inspirational speaker, and he's the author of a book called Eats with Sinners. Now, it first came out, maybe almost a decade ago. But last year, Aaron published what we will describe as a less theoretical, much more practical, pass the beans version of Eats with Sinners, Loving Like Jesus. Aaron Chambers, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Carmen, thank you so much for having me back on. I love your show.
So I love talking with you in part because you have such enthusiasm for people who are not yet in the church. And I really feel like Eats with Sinners is a book written to Christians about how to sort of get over ourselves and become much less afraid or much less timid, or I don't even know what the word is, just less apprehensive about actually just sitting down at table fellowship and in the breaking of the bread, letting Jesus be known. Did I kind of get what Eats with Sinners is about?
Yes. Yes, you did. Yes, because here's the thing, Carmen, we overcomplicate so many things as Christians, including evangelism, and it is sometimes we are reluctant to share our faith because of sometimes artificial barriers that we have erected between us and the process and between us and people who need to know about Jesus Christ, and some of those are fear. Sometimes it's our strategy, sometimes it's our plans. I am very familiar with evangelistic plans, and I, you know, go to evangelistic conferences and that kind of thing, and I learn a lot. But sometimes I just want to stand up and say, "It's not that complicated. Just use the opportunities we're immersed in, redeem relationships with people who don't know Jesus Christ, and allow Jesus to work through those relationships, and you will find ample opportunities to share your faith. And it doesn't have to be planned or orchestrated. But you're right, Carmen. Sometimes, you know, we allow fears." And our insecurities and maybe our expectations of what evangelism should be to keep us from just doing what should honestly just be as simple as an intentional relationship through which we introduce someone to Jesus Christ.
Okay, so one of the words that you use there is intentional. Tell us what an intentional relationship is.
Okay, so an intentional relationship is... First of all, it's bathed in integrity. That's the very first thing I mentioned in the book. Everything we do when it comes to interacting with people needs to be just completely all about integrity. Jesus began his ministry with a test of his integrity in the wilderness, and he passed it. With integrity, we just redeem the relationships we have with people. And an intentional relationship is, for example, I enjoy coffee. I enjoy going to coffee. I go to coffee every day. I work at a coffee shop, so every day do some of my work there. So here's the thing. Why go by myself every single day when I have opportunities to invite a non-Christian male friend to meet me for coffee and just build a relationship and let God do his thing through that relationship? So it's about an intentional relationship is just about bringing purpose and direction to opportunities we have before us every single day. And instead of just... drinking coffee by myself, I drink coffee with another guy who, you know, may need to know about Jesus Christ. And I don't. The way it works, too, by the way, and I explain all this in the book. It's just it's like, you know, Jesus is the Lord of the harvest. He wants to bring the harvest in. We just got to go in the field. And so what I found is sometimes the conversations don't get to Jesus for a while. Sometimes they go to the very first, you know, meeting, but sometimes it may take up to a year or longer. But an intentional relationship is just a relationship that we have gone into with the hopes that God will do his thing, and we'll be a part of it.
Yeah, I just love that. All right, friends, the book is Eats with Sinners, Loving Like Jesus. The author is Aaron Chambers. We, of course, have some copies. And so if you would like to participate in a drawing to get those copies, you can call us at 877-93-FAITH, or you can email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. So Aaron, you are a coach. Can I ask you a completely off, well, maybe it's not an off-the-book question. So this coach is trapped in this cave with his team, like in Thailand, under in this cave. And I find myself thinking, wow, they're trapped in the dark. They're completely lost. Help has to come from the outside. Lots of opportunities there to talk about the gospel. How as a track coach, do you find sort of the stuff that's going on out there in the world that people are already talking about? How do you find your way into conversations with young people about those things and then build the bridge to Jesus?
Yeah. So, yes, I am a track coach, and it's one of the things that, you know, I need to remind people. I'm also, you know, a lead minister at a church that over 1,000, and, you know, with a staff, a large staff that we take care of, but our philosophy is Eats with Sinners, so it's they want us to be involved in the community because that's what it's really about. So, so as a coach, I've been paying attention to what's been happening over there and, you know, following it and praying that, you know, the boys and the coach will all get out safely and putting myself in that coach's position. A coach is one of the most influential people in a young person's life. And so that's a lot of pressure. And so what I try to do in our situation is I just love my kids so much, my athletes. And I was with them this morning from 7 to 9:30 at practice. We have practice every morning during the summer. And I love them so much, and I just love being with them and building relationships with them and getting to talk with them about maybe some of the problems they're dealing with and challenges they're facing at home and being an advocate for their parents and being an advocate for them when they need hope and they need encouragement. So for me, I have countless opportunities every single day where I get a chance to just to be blessed by these young people and to be a blessing to them. And they're just too many to count. But it's about using my time and resources well and being with these young people. Because I'm with them every day. During the summer, it's morning training. And then during the school year, every afternoon, I leave the office at 3 o'clock, and I'm with them. And then almost every single day off, I'm at a meet for either cross country or track. And so it's just, for me, it's just about, once again, being intentional with my time and realizing that the time I spend with those young people is such a blessing. I mean, they're incredible young people. I have so much love for that generation. And but because I'm accessible, countless opportunities to speak into their life, to be Christ to them, to be an encouragement to them, and to just sometimes even just listen to them and hear their hearts. And just, for me, it's all about making the love of Jesus Christ accessible to these amazing young people.
So throughout the book, one of the things that I really appreciate are the one-page personal stories, you know, Darlene and Sue and Tim and Nicole. I'm wondering if there's one that, you know, just happens to be in your head or on your heart that you could just share with folks as an example of what's in here in terms of the practicality of the way this book is put together.
Yes, there's one I love, and it's so funny you ask that. I have never been asked about those stories at all since the original came out.
That's because there are really bad interviewers who don't read the book.
You are amazing.
But,
So the one that I love that is by Twyla. Twyla is a professor at a Christian college, at Johnson Christian University, and she has been there, I think, for 30 years. She's amazing. She teaches in the, education. She teaches English. She teaches ministry. She's amazing. Well, she has edited every single book I have ever written.
Mm.
She's a trusted confidant. Well, she shared a story about her dad. And her dad was a preacher and just an amazing – her family is an amazing family. But her dad as a preacher would often bring home strangers and bring them to their house. He'd have hitchhikers, people who just were homeless, people who were down on their luck. And Twyla says that, it was not uncommon for her to come down some mornings and there'd be a strange man there at the breakfast table, and how God – used her dad to touch countless lives, And she mentions this story about a guy named Rich who was a part of their life. And he was a cynic, and her dad showed them love. And just stories like that. Like, I love that story of just giving, you know, feeding Rich, this hitchhiker who's a homeless guy, her dad put himself out there and taking a risk to share the love of Jesus Christ. And it's things like that that really light my fire, because they're not hard to do. Like, we're surrounded by opportunities like that. You know, it's scary because we're like, what's going to happen? Worst case scenario. But the worst case scenario, you know, only happens in horror movies. In real life, it's amazing things can happen when we show the love of Jesus Christ in radical ways, like Twyla's dad did with Rich. Now, she doesn't know the end of the story, whatever happened with Rich, but I'll tell you this, like, you know, for a weekend, Rich was surrounded by the love of Jesus Christ in the home of a pastor who just had the courage and the heart to say, hey, come eat with us. And so I love that story.
Yeah, so I love that story, too. So here's the power of radio. So if you know a guy named Rich who's tall and skinny, maybe he's from Missouri, you would maybe find him recognizable because there's a part of his finger missing on his left hand, which when she was 12, Twyla took note of at their dinner table. If you know the end of his story, and if he was touched by this experience of this Good Samaritan dad and this Christian family with whom he got to spend a weekend many years ago, hey, we'd love to hear that story at Faith Radio. Like, that would be a fun way to bless Twyla all the way back around. So give us a call at 877-93-FAITH. You can always email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. And if you want to enter a drawing for Eats with Sinners, Loving Like Jesus by Aaron Chambers, you can, again, use that same phone number and that same email address, carmen@myfaithradio.com. Aaron, before we part ways today, tell me what, for you, the impact of this book has been, because you've sort of been in this conversation and in this ministry in this form for a long time.
Oh, my goodness. What a great question. Okay, so can I start personally and then branch out from there? So personally, it has radically changed my life. It all started with a study of the Gospel of Luke about the year 2008, which ended up becoming the book. And I realized that I was squandering so many opportunities to connect with people because I had overcomplicated it. I grew up in I'm very proud of my religious heritage and grew up in great churches. But when it came to evangelism, all I was pretty much taught was either a five-finger method of sharing our faith, or there's steps you have to take people through, and if you don't take them through the right way, they could go to hell for all eternity. You know, it was all this pressure, and they had to memorize scriptures for every single point, da-da-da-da. Well, when I discovered that sharing your faith could be just as easy as putting yourself around people who don't know Jesus and just being accessible, making his love and grace accessible, it just radically changed my life. So now, like I said, for the past 5 years, I am very intentional with my time, and because of that, I have just countless opportunities to share Christ. And then seeing that happen in other people has been...
Can we leave it there? Yeah. Can you hold with us through the break and we can get the rest of the answer?
Absolutely.
All right. Hey, this is Connecting Faith. We'll be right back. Hey, friends, you're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Welcome back. Continuing my conversation with Aaron Chambers. I mean, he's got all of these really wonderful accolades I could give you, and all kinds of responsibilities in his life. I'm talking with him today primarily because he's the author of a book called Eats with Sinners, Loving Like Jesus. And before the break, we were talking about how not only writing this book, but living in this way and leading his congregation in this way has impacted his life personally. But the impact goes beyond that. So, Aaron, first of all, welcome back to Connecting Faith. And then let's just carry on with that conversation about how this book has really changed not only you, but ministry.
Okay, so, Carmen, your show is amazing. Thank you, by the way. And so, yeah, so what I was saying was it's impacted my life. Like, it's radically changed my life and how I approach relationships with people. But here's the cool thing. Just the countless stories I have of people just in our church and how, as they've lived this philosophy of loving like Jesus and eating with sinners, how it's impacted their life. Just yesterday morning at church, our children's minister stopped me and said, "Hey, I got to tell you a great East West Center story." I was like, "All right, man, tell me." And Aaron said his neighbor, he's been building a relationship with his neighbor, and they had a conversation last week. And his neighbor said, "Okay, Aaron, I know you're a minister, and I will come to church if you'll come to my gym." And Aaron's like, "It is on," because Aaron's talked about working out, you know, in the past and hasn't really gotten to it yet. But so anyway, Aaron comes up to me yesterday morning. He said, "Pastor," he said, "Aaron, guess what?" He said, my neighbor came. He came to church, and we just happened to walk in. We didn't know we have four services. And he said, "We walk in and sat down, and my wife was sitting next to him already, and we didn't realize the connection, and that it was all so exciting." And so as he was leaving church, he said he loved church. And he said, "Aaron, there's two passes waiting for you at the gym, at the front desk, and I'll see you there." And he's like, "You will see me there because this is how it works." So, but he was so excited that his neighbor, you know, that he built a relationship to the point where the neighbor said, "All right, I'll come to your church if you come to my gym." And just seeing that happen, and that's just the most recent example, but seeing that happen in churches all over the country and all over the world, actually, and then seeing it happen here at Journey, it just lights my fire. It's like, this works. It's not about – it's so often just so complicated. It doesn't need to be complicated. Just look around, love people in the name of Jesus Christ, and let God do the heavy lifting, and he will give you opportunities to share the love and grace and salvation of Jesus Christ.
So I think that the last time you and I talked, I shared the story about the pie at the church. And if I didn't, I'll share it now. My listeners may have already heard it. But this whole notion that we should be able to taste and see that God is good, and that we really should, as Christians, you know, be allowing God to make himself known through the breaking of bread. Like, there really is something about table fellowship. And I was out of church in Indiana. This is a number of years ago. And I can't even remember, like, what I was doing. But I was sharing something in each of the services. And so, you know, it had been the first service, came and went. And then we were in the second service. And in the second service, they make this announcement, which they never made at the early service. And it was about the fact that if you're a first-time visitor, there's pie, like a whole pie for you. And, you know, this lady in the church, she makes these homemade apple pies every single week for first-time visitors. And so I spent my whole time standing there talking about the fact that the people in their community don't know there's pie at church. I guarantee you, if people knew there was pie, they'd be at church. But too often, we sort of sell this as a pie in the sky kind of thing, you know, Christianity. And it's not. It can radically change. Well, it does. It radically changes your life here and now, as you very well know, and the fellowship that we can enjoy as Christians and there, and then share with other people is really it's grossly underutilized as a tool of evangelism. So
yep.
Thank you, Aaron, for Eats with Sinners. Friends, if you are interested in a copy, you can enter a drawing for the copies we have by calling us at 877-93-FAITH or emailing me, Carmen@myfaithradio.com. Aaron Chambers, thank you so much for being with us today on Connecting Faith.
My pleasure. Thank you, Carmen.
Absolutely. Okay, friends, let me turn my attention to a couple of more headlines today so that you and I can, you know, bring the mind of Christ to bear on what's going on in the world. So mainline Christian churches, I don't know if you're aware of this, but mainline Christian churches, which include everything from the United Church of Christ, which is the UCC, to the Presbyterian Church USA, that's the PCUSA, to the ELCA, which is the Lutheran Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church. Oh, see, now I'm going to be embarrassed because there's probably a lot of ELCA people listening and they're going to be tormented by the fact that I can't remember what the acronym stands for exactly. And then we have like the Episcopal Church, also one of the mainline denominations. They've all been shrinking for some period of time. They're all also what we would consider very theologically liberal. And I'm not here in any way to denigrate anybody's form of faith and expression of worship. I am here to illuminate one particular situation in the Episcopal Church that has me very concerned in terms of theology. And so I want to lift it up to you because I think it's a conversation that each and every one of us as Christians should be knowledgeable about and a conversation in which we should be equipped to engage. And so think of this seriously, not as a denigration in any way of the Episcopal Church, but my raising concern about a decision that they have made and a process in which they are now engaged, which I believe is contrary to Scripture. And so here's what's going on. The Episcopal Church is moving toward revising the Book of Common Prayer. And what they are seeking to do is to change the language that refers to God and make it what is known as gender neutral. Now, there actually are no gender neutral personal pronouns other than it. And that doesn't seem like it's going to work. And so normally what happens when a group or a denomination engages in the process of neutering the language related to God, normally what they do is they go in and they take out half of the masculine references and they replace them with feminine references. So it's not really that they're making it gender neutral. What they are doing is making it gender confused. I think you should keep that in mind as this conversation progresses in the Episcopal Church. So at their national meeting, the Episcopal Church, which let me remind you again, is a mainline U.S. denomination. That denomination formed a committee to, quote, provide a pathway toward revising the Book of Common Prayer. Now, let's be very clear here. The Episcopal Church in the United States of America does not have the power to actually amend nor edit the actual Book of Common Prayer. All they can do is edit the American version of it. The Book of Common Prayer is used by Anglicans around the globe and has been so since 1549. And so, you know, whatever addition it is that the Episcopal Church is now talking about producing, it will be a specifically American version used only by the Episcopal Church, not by Anglicans worldwide, and not by your Anglicans down the street who are a part of Anglican communions and denominations here in the United States that are more evangelical than the Episcopal Church. So here's what we have to say about this. The Episcopalians are arguing, or the ones advocating for this are arguing, that the overwhelming use of masculine language, quote, is a hindrance to their inclusion efforts. Okay. So my challenge here is that we don't have the right to tell God how God should be addressed. And what's particularly curious to me about this whole thing is that the proposed changes include not only this gender neutralizing language for God and the inclusion of marriage liturgies that reflect the denomination's same-sex marriage practices, but actually adding a ceremony to the Book of Common Prayer that celebrates a transgender person's adoption of a new name. So on the one hand, These folks are advocating for revising the historic prayer book in ways that would say God does not have the right of self-identification. God does not have the right to his own preferred pronouns. But human beings who want to assert a gender that is unaligned with their biological reality, they not only have the right to do that, they will gain the church's blessing. And with the church's blessing, the church says God is blessing it. I have to tell you, this is the height of arrogance in ecclesiastical think something. I don't even have a word for it, whatever it is that they're doing. So to be clear, the Episcopalians who are arguing for this are arguing that God is subject to human redefinition of his gendered self-identification, but humans are not subject to God's defining of gendered categories. Just pause and think about that for a moment. Those who are seeking to amend the Book of Common Prayer by having neutering the language or multiplying the gendered language or gender confusing the language related to God want gender confused people here to have the right to their own chosen personal pronouns. So I just want to be very clear. Like marriage, well, first of all, I should say this. God is neither male nor female. Those are actually categories created for us as human beings. God is spirit. And we worship him in spirit and in truth. God has chosen to reveal himself in the incarnation in the person of Jesus Christ, who was physically male. And God has chosen also to reveal himself as Father. And that is the relationship between the Father and the Son as two parts of a three-part Trinity that we know as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And so when you start talking about changing the language, you are going to be talking about not only changing the Father language, but changing the relational language of the Trinity, which is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, which is the baptismal language that Jesus actually gives us. It's also changing the language, potentially, of the Lord's Prayer, where Jesus expressly instructs his disciples, when you pray, pray this way. That didn't take you long, did it? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. I mean, holy be your name. I'm going to consider your name holy and set apart. God is pretty fiercely guarded about his name. If you want to do an interesting study the name of God and how God feels about his name. There's actually a commandment in relationship to it. So like marriage, God's fatherhood is actually not modeled after human experience. Like, we don't have this image of the marriage feast in heaven because we know what marriage is like here. No, we have marriage here because in all eternity, there's a marriage feast in heaven. Same truth holds here in terms of fatherhood. We actually know what fatherhood is intended to look like because we have God who is a good father, a good father. So God reveals himself as Father. And God has every right to be identified by his own preferred masculine pronouns. If you want some text to read in looking at this, I direct you to Isaiah 42 and 49, Matthew 23, 1 John 1, Hebrews 1. I mean, those are just for starters. Now, again, I am not saying that God is male. It is in his image that God created human beings as male and female. And yes, there are feminine metaphors for God in the Bible. I'm quite aware of that. But Jesus refers to God as Father, and Jesus gives us that language to use that we might cry out, Abba, Father, and actually know what it is to be the reconciled children of God. All right, friends, I got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the situation in Thailand. We're going to talk about the ongoing rescue efforts, and we're going to make the connecting point. This is Connecting Faith, and I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Hey, friends, you're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. I would be remiss if I did not give a shout out today to the manager of Lowe's in Harriman, Tennessee. So I was driving back from my vacation, which was awesome. And all of a sudden, in Harriman, Tennessee, on Interstate 40, my car indicates that it's not like I have a tire going flat. I have a completely flat tire, like in a millisecond. And so by God's grace, I feel like there was an exit right there. And so I got off on the exit and I looked both ways and I decided to turn left. Like, you feel like you have enough, you know, and I knew I didn't have any air in it because it said zero, but you feel like you have enough to get to somewhere safe. This is my working theory. And so, and don't worry, I'm getting to the Thailand story here in just a minute with no connection to the story I'm telling you now. The people who were with me and I, we pull into this parking lot where there's air, right? And so, you know, I put my credit card through the thing. I inflate the tire back up with the air and it's just inflating right back up. And then at some point, the pressure reaches the place where apparently it finds the same hole it came out of on the interstate. And I mean, it's coming out as fast as it's going in with the same level of noise and intensity. You know, I won't make the sound of a hissing tire here on the radio, but you get my point. So now I have a real dilemma. I have a flat tire. I have kids in the car and a trunk full of luggage. And start the process of unloading everything out of the trunk to get to, you know, that tiny little tire that's hidden down there in the bottom of the trunk. And this lovely gentleman stops in his pickup truck and he says, "Do you need help?" And the answer is yes. Yes, this is not a time for pride. This is not a time for, you know, thinking you can do something. It's beastly hot. It's Sunday afternoon. Yes, sir, I need help. And so he parks his truck and he comes and he helps with the process and he changes the tire. And, you know, I'm so grateful. And, you know, you sort of embarrassedly, you know, you offer to help and then you realize I would just be in the way. And so he changes the tire and he says, well, you know, I look at it this way. Now I don't have to go back to work. And I said, I get the feeling that if I wrote you a note to go back to work, you'd be giving the note to yourself. And he's like, yeah, that's pretty much right. And I said, well, what are you doing? And he says, he points across the highway and he says, I'm the manager at Lowe's. So there you go. Here is my shout out to the manager of Lowe's in Harriman, Tennessee, for his Good Samaritan act yesterday in putting the little donut tire on the car and helping a family in distress. So there you go. Thankful to God for people willing to put themselves out in order to help out others. Okay. Certainly, we all know what's going on in Thailand. We have been paying attention. Some of us riveted. I haven't really been riveted to the news for the last week, I'll just admit to you. But for the last couple of days, pretty riveted to the story out of Thailand, particularly as these boys and their coach are now being evacuated by no small effort out of this system of caves, this network of caves under this mountain. This network of caves has flooded, and these boys and their coach have been trapped in there for 17 days. Today is day 17. So if you're not familiar with this story, I would encourage you to check it out. 17 days ago, a soccer coach and, there must be 12 boys. There's a total of 13 people. So 12 kids from the team and their coach, you know, after practice, rode their bikes to this cave network because their bikes are locked up and their soccer shoes are sitting out there. So they went in barefoot. Apparently, the first kilometer in, pretty safe, pretty wide open. And then you reach this network of, you know, narrowing passages, and it's obviously dark. And there are apparently signs that say, you know, in the rainy season, don't go here because these caves flood. Well, they worked their way somewhere back there into the network of caves, and indeed it did flood, and they couldn't find their way back out. So that's when the search began. The search took almost 2 weeks, and the rescue has now been underway for, this is now the third day. Four boys were extracted yesterday, four boys extracted today, and so there are still five people left inside that, deep inside that mountain, in that cave network. So why bring this up? Well, because I think this is actually a great opportunity for Christians to enter into the conversation that everybody in the culture is having. Obviously, there's reasonable fear of being trapped underground in a completely dark environment with rising water and no way of how to get out, no sense of even which direction to go if you wanted to get out. They are 4 kilometers deep inside this maze of caves inside this mountain. And to get from some parts of this cave to the other parts now, you have to actually scuba dive because the cave's completely full of water. It's monsoon season. So I want you to imagine just for a moment that you are 4 kilometers deep inside of a mountain cave. You are sitting on a ledge. Water has risen to cut off your only exit. It is completely dark. You've been there for 2 weeks. 14 days and nights, but you don't know the difference between day and night because you're 14 kilometers inside of a cave network that's now completely filled with water. Oh, let's add to that, you don't know how to swim. Let's add to that that you're a kid. So this is the drama that's unfolding halfway around the world, and I think it gives us a real opportunity for substantive conversations. Topics of conversation that you could have would be fear, separation, wisdom. Like maybe there should have been some wisdom in terms of paying attention to the signs or the signs of the times. But bravery, the risking of life to save others. There's already one rescuer who has lost his life seeking to save the lives of these young people. There's a worldview conversation to have. There are Buddhists gathered to pray for a miracle. I'm not even sure that that theology works itself out if there's no personal God to whom you're praying. Who's going to perform the miracle? Why would you have any expectation that a miracle would happen if you didn't have the confidence in a God who has demonstrated himself powerful enough to work a miracle? And so the language of miracles is certainly an interesting one that you're going to hear referenced in terms of what's going on in Haiti. The boys and their coach were literally lost, and help absolutely had to come from the outside. Now, what does that sound like? What does it sound like to you to be completely lost, completely in the dark, in desperate need of light, and recognizing that help had to come from the outside? Well, that sure does sound like the gospel. That sure does sound like God's redemptive narrative that unfolds all across human history. Well, the whole thing reminded me of those Chilean miners. I don't remember if you remember that story. I can't even remember exactly when it was. I do remember that they made a movie out of it, and I think the movie came out, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago. The movie was called The 33, and it chronicles the experience of these Chilean miners who... I remember that they were in the mine, and it's in Chile, and it collapsed. And so they were buried under the equivalent of enough rock to build the Empire State Building. Like, I remember some of the dramatic stuff like that. And they had like a 3-day supply of food. They had no natural light, sweltering heat, and somehow they kept one another alive. And what the movie, is called The 33, what the movie really emphasizes is the faith and the prayers and the shared courage and the fellowship developed by these men. And getting back to our conversation about Eats with Sinners, Loving Like Jesus, that we just had with Aaron Chambers, this communal experience of breaking and dividing up ever smaller portions of food became this sacramental act, you know, and Jesus was very much made known to them in the breaking of the bread under all that rubble. And again, help had to come from the outside. Light had to come into the darkness from the outside. They were lost. So there are some times that the news cycle and the news itself actually gives us, like, hands to us, really, I don't want to say that they're easy, because they're incredibly difficult stories and the human experience involved is quite dramatic. But they do give us as Christians talking points. Maybe that's the way to think about it, because these are real life experiences of really being lost when help really does have to come from the outside. And the truth of the matter is, we're all lost. We're all in the dark. We all need saving. And help has to come from the outside. And help did come in the person of Jesus Christ, who took on human flesh in order that he might dwell among us, full of grace and truth, that he might do for us what we certainly could not do for ourselves, and frankly, what nobody else could do for us either. And so I want to invite you to have the gospel conversations with people that the news headlines give us the opportunity to have. And so today that might be Haiti, that might be Thailand, that might be something happening right around the corner from where you live. It might be something happening with your neighbor next door. Okay, friends, there's something happening this week that I think it would be fun to invite you to. I talk from time to time, not just here on the radio, but in other places and other venues, and I'm actually going to do this webinar with Presbyterians Protecting Life. And it's going to be on July the 12th at 8 p.m. Eastern. And you can go to ppl.org to sign up for the webinar. And we're going to meet via a technology called Zoom, which you can do on your phone or your laptop computer. All right, friends, I'm Carmen LaBerge. It's always a privilege and a pleasure to be with you. Visit us at Connecting Faith page on myfaithradio.com. Have a great day and God bless. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Connecting Faith. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend to grow the impact of Connecting Faith. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a conversation.